We continue today with lesson number 4 in our ongoing study of Mishnayos Maseches Chulin. And today we will complete the first chapter of Chulin. We'll be learning the first perek, the 6th and 7th Mishnah. Perek Aleph, Mishneh Vov, and Mishneh Zayin. Mishneh Vov continues with the list that we've begun yesterday of various aspects of halachic paradox, where a criterion which renders one situation kasher renders another situation pasul. And the Mishnah begins by comparing the requirements for a porah, for the cow of the porah aduma, of the red heifer, which is used as part of the purification of a person who has become tomei lemeis, who has been in contact with a dead body, versus the requirements for the eglo arufa, for the calf, which in the case where a corpse was found murdered between two cities, and the city wanted to exonerate itself from any guilt, so the Beis Din of that city would come to a certain place, as is described in the Torah, and they would go through a procedure whereby which the Eglo Arufa, this young calf, was killed. The Mishnah explains, Kosher Baporo Posul Be'eglo. The procedure which is used in the Poro Aduma, in the red heifer, namely shchita, as the pasuk says in Pashas Chukas, vishochato solifonov, that poro must be shechted according to the procedures of shchita, of slaughtering an animal, posul boeglo, but that procedure would be improper and invalid in the case of putting to death the eglo arufa, because the eglo arufa must be put to death by arefa. Arefa means chopping its head from the top, in the back of the neck down, as the pasuk says, "V'orfu shom eso eglo banocha." However, quite the contrary, the Mishnah continues, "Kosher bo eglo." This procedure of arefa, of guillotining the animal, so to speak, from the back of its neck, whereas it's the proper procedure for the eglo arufa, posul ba poro, would be improper and invalid if done to a poro aduma for which shechita is required. Another paradox, kosher ba kohanim posul ba leviim. The kohanim, a kohen, may perform his avodah on the Beis HaMikdash, may do the service in the temple, from the time that he reaches puberty, that he is a mature adult of 13 or so years old, and can continue to work all of his life, even when he is quite elderly. However, the leviim become kosher for work only at age 30, and their retirement age, so to speak, is at age 50. Indeed, our Gemara explains that in the time of the Mishkan, when the Jews were in the wilderness, and the Mishkan was traveled from place to place, so then the Leviim became posul for avodah after 50. The rationale presumably being that they were doing hard labor, and after 50 they were no longer fit for that labor. However, in the Beis HaMikdosh, there was no such maso bakosev. They didn't have to carry heavy burdens. So then they did not become posul at age 50, but rather they became posul when their voices could no longer sing properly. Whereas the Kohanim, doesn't make a difference what type of a voice he has, he can continue to serve in the worship services of the Beis HaMikdash as old as he may be. The Mishnah continues, kosher ba'leviim posul ba'kohanim. Certain defects, physical defects, ba'alei mumim, can be leviim, can't do the service of the Levites. However, they cannot do the service in the Beis HaMikdash as Kohanim. So a Kohen who's a Balmum cannot do the service. He's posul for the Avodah, whereas a Levi who is a Balmum can do his Avodah. Tahor b'chli cheres, the Mishnah continues, Tamei b'chol hakelim. The rules of Tumah, of ritual contamination, which apply to vessels made of every conceivable material except earthenware, except clay, ceramics, do not apply to a clay vessel, to a vessel which is a ceramic vessel, a kli cheres. That which is tohor b'chli cheres is tomei b'chol ha-kelim, because if tumah, for example, a sheretz, a dead reptile or rodent of a certain type, touches the back, the outside of a kli cheres, the gav of the kli cheres, the kli cheres does not become tomei, whereas all other kelim do become tomei, whether the tumah has touched their gav, their outside surface, or their toch, their inside surface. Quite the contrary, the Mishnah continues, tohor b'chol ha-kelim, tomei b'chli cheres. That those rules which do not render other kelim tomei, but under which the other kelim remain tohor. For example, if an object of tumah is suspended within the airspace of a metal or wooden keli, and never actually comes into contact with the walls. So the halacha is that the other kelim remain tohor, because the object of tumah has not touched the actual surface, inner or outer, of the vessel. However, with reference to a kli cheres, a tumah object suspended in the air, inner air, of the kli cheres, does render the entire kli cheres tameh, even if the object of tumah never actually touched the inner or outer walls of the kli cheres, as the pasuk says in Chumash Vayikra Perek Yuralov Pasuk Lamed Gimel, v'chol kli cheres asher yipol mehem el tocho kol asher betocho yitma. So the toch of the kli cheres, the inner airspace of the kli cheres, also becomes tameh if a tumah object is suspended there. Tohar b'chol ha-kelim, tamei b'chli cheres. The Mishnah continues, contrasting wooden kelim, wooden utensils, from metal utensils. Tohar b'chli eitz, tamei b'chli matchos. That which is tohar for a wooden kelim. The concept here is pshute kli eitz. If you have a plank of wood, which has no receptacle, it has no base kibbutz, not a cup, it's not a bowl, it's not a closet, but rather it's flat wood. Planks of lumber, for example, they do not become tomei, even though they may be usable for various purposes, but they're not mekabel tumah. However, a flat piece of iron, even if it is not a keli, for example, a shpod, a spit, which is used to barbecue a meat, it has no container, it has no base kibbel, it's just flat. Nevertheless, it is mekabel tumah. So tohor b'chli eitz, pshute kli eitz, are tohor if they come into contact with a tumah object, whereas kli matchos are tomei, even if they are pshuteim, even if they are just plain flat surfaces. The Mishnah continues, tahor b'chle matchos, tomei b'chle eitz. Gol mekli matchos, a vessel, a metal vessel, which is complete, it's a cup, it's a bowl, it's a frying pan, but it is not yet completely finished. You can't put it yet on the shelves. People won't buy it. It's just raw metal shaped into a pan or a pot or a dish or whatever. They are not mekabel tumah, because the reasoning is that such kelim are used for kavod. They're used to serve guests, etc., etc., and therefore they're not used, even though pragmatically, practically, they can be used. They're a good frying pan, but it doesn't look nice. So they're not yet considered finished, and therefore golmei kli eitz, just the raw, unfinished, unpolished, but yet practically usable metal keli, is not mekabel tumah, as opposed to golmei kli eitz. If you have a wooden cup, a wooden bowl, That is mekabel tuma even if it is not totally, completely finished. The reasoning being that wood is used as a material for pragmatic, practical purposes, not necessarily to serve guests. You don't serve your guest in a wooden cup, you serve him in a metal cup. However, a wooden cup is perfectly good to drink your coffee in, or drink your whatever in. So therefore, golme klie, it's unfit, not completely finished kliets are mekabel tuma, whereas not completely finished clay matchos, metal, are not mekabel tuma. The Mishnah continues with this contrasting approach and compares hachayov bashkedim hamorim potur bamesukim. There are two types of almonds, bitter ones, shkedim hamorim, and sweet ones, shkedim mesukim. So the bitter ones, aroy la'achila, are edible only when they're very small and yet soft, whereas the sweet ones are not roy la'achila, not edible in their younger stage, only when they grow and they attain their full sweetness. So therefore, the small bitter shkedim are chayav and masros. That's the royal achila. A little bitter depends on the taste. Al tam v'al reyach, ein lehitvakeach. Different people have different tastes, different strokes for different folks. So the shkedim hamorim, when they're young, when they're small, they are obligated in masros. But small shkedim misukim, small sweet almonds, are potter from masros because they've not yet reached their stage of sweetness at which people normally eat them. Vice versa, hachayov bamisukim potter bamorim. The sweet almonds, when they are older, they've been on the tree longer and they've attained their full sweetness, then they're chayev and masros. However, the shkedim hamorim, the bitter ones, the when they are at that stage, when they're potter from masros because they're no longer edible, they're no longer ro'ilah achila unless they are sweetened artificially by being toasted or whatever. So we finish Mishnah Vov. If we continue to Mishnah Zion, we have also comparisons and contrasts somewhat different from the ones we've been studying previously. Hatemed. Temed is water which, when one produces wine, and after gets the he's extracted the good wine from the barrel, at the bottom of the barrel there are charsanim vizogim, there are peels of grapes and seeds of grapes lying at the bottom of the barrel. The grapes have already been squeezed out and the juice has been extracted. If you add water to these dregs, to the rinds and pits at the bottom of the barrel, and leave the water there for a while, then that water begins to absorb some of the taste and flavor and strength of the dregs, chatzanim and zagim, at the bottom of the barrel. They have a taste of wine. So hatemetz, and that process is called hichmitz. It's become sour, meaning it's become affected by the taste of the wine. So hatemed, this water, achelo hechmitz, before it's reached the point of hechmitz, it has not yet absorbed enough from the wine. It's basically still water. Eino nikach b'chesef maaser. The money which one used to exchange maaser sheni for it, if a person has a farm in Tzfat and he can't schlep all of his grain, all of one-tenth of his grain, actually less than one-tenth, the maaser sheni of his grain to Yerushalayim to consume there, so he can exchange it for money and take the money to Yerushalayim, but that money must be spent on food and drink, as the Pasuk says, V'nosato ha-kesef, b'chol asher ta'ave nafshecho b'bokor uvatzon uvayayin uvashechor. But this temed, before it's reached the stage of hechmitz, is just water, maybe slightly flavored water, but it's basically just water. And you cannot spend kesef ma'aser sheni on water. You have to buy yayin v'shechor, beer, yayin, something of substance, not water. Ufozel es ha-mikvah. Similarly, since it's adjudged to be at this stage before hechmitz, it's just water, perhaps slightly colored and slightly tasting different than water, but basically, halachically, water. So, if one has a mikveh which does not have the requisite amount of water in it yet, it doesn't have the full 40 saw of water. At that point, that mikveh, if three lugim of fetched water, as opposed to natural water, of mayim she'uvim, fall into the mikveh at that point, when the mikveh does not have yet arboim sa'a, renders the entire mikveh invalid, pasul. So, if wine or some other type of liquid falls into the water, three lugim of it, it does not necessarily render the mikveh invalid. The only thing that would render the mikveh invalid if the water of the mikveh becomes totally discolored because of the wine. But three lugim in 39 saw of water will, of wine, in other words, three lugim of wine in 39, in other words, 40 minus a little bit of water, would not discolor the water. So therefore, it would not passel the mikveh, would not render the mikveh invalid. However, this temed, before it's hichmitz, is mayim, is water, and therefore it's not wine. It's not a matter of discoloring it or not discoloring it. It's a matter of three lugim of water fell into this less than 40 saw mikveh. The mikveh is possible. Main point is that this temed, before the stage of hechmitz, before it's it's begun to bubble and show signs that it's become no longer water but actually a wine product, is adjudged halachically to be water. However, once Misha Hichmitz, once it's reached that stage, it's bubbling and seething, and you see that the chemistry has changed. It's no longer water, but there's a lot of grape ingredient in the liquid. That's Hichmitz. Then, Nikach Bechesef Maaser, you can purchase it in Yerushalayim with the money of Maaser Sheni, because it is Yayin, not Mayim. Ve'eino posel es ha-mikvah, and if it falls into a mikvah which is less than 40 saw, it does not render it posel unless the sufficient amount of temed, now temed after hichmitz, so that's yayin, to cause shinui mare, to cause the discoloration of the water of the mikvah. Similarly, another contrast which we're about to learn is this. Ho'achin ha-shutofin. If you have two brothers who are partners, they've inherited their father's estate and they have become partners. So there's different stages in this business arrangement. Kishechayovin bakolbon piturin mimase behema. When they are obligated to give the kolbon charge, which I'll explain in a moment, then if it's that type of an arrangement, then they are exempt from Maaser Behema, from giving 1/10 of their animals as a tithe. Now, the halacha is about a kolbon as follows. Every year, generally during the month of Adar, just before Nisan, the Jewish people would bring a machatzis hashekel, a half shekel to the mikdosh, and that would be used to fund the communal korbanos in the Beis Hamikdash. A kolbon is a sort of a surcharge, a small surcharge on top of that machatzis hashekel. Now, the halacha is, if I decide I'm going to give the machatzis hashekel for my neighbor who nebuch is out of a job, he's poor, he can't afford it, so I'll give the shekel for him. Or my neighbor is doing fine financially, but he's a nice fellow, I'm going to give him a gift, I'll pay his machatzis hashekel. In such a situation, I do not have to give this surcharge, this kolbon. Similarly, a father who gives the machatzis hashekel for his sons as a gift is exempt from the kolbon. However, for my own donation of machatzis hashekel, I do have to give a kolbon. It's only if I'm giving it on behalf of someone else for whom I have no obligation, I'm just doing it because of charity or because of goodwill, then I do not have to give this kolbon surcharge. However, two partners who decide as a partner we are giving the machatzis hashekel as one, they are obligated to give the kolbon. That's the situation by kolbon, that a partner is obligated in paying the surcharge for the machatzis hashekel that he gives for the partnership. A. B, when it comes to maaser behema, to my obligation, if I have a flock of animals which they own myself, I have to give a tithe, one-tenth of the animals. However, two partners, if me and you are partners in a flock of animals, we are exempt entirely from Masa Behema for all the cattle which was born after we became partners. Our mission is teaching us that if two brothers have inherited their father's estate and they've divided the estate, they said, you take this and this and I'll take that and that, and they're now split. And then they decide, let's become partners. So this partnership is a new partnership. It's not a continuation of the history of the estate. The estate has been divided. Now they're reuniting their financial resources to become partners. So they have a halacha of partners. And when they give a machzis hashekel, they must give the kolbon surcharge. But when it comes to masa behema, they are exempt. So here's an example. Kishechayavin b'kolbon, when they're considered bona fide partners and must give the surcharge. That's the downside. The upside of the being partners is that you're exempt. Peturin mimasa behema. Vice versa. Kishechayavin b'masa behema. Peturin min ha'kolbon. Suppose they never split the estate. They just said, let's continue the estate. Let's make the estate endure beyond Papa's death. We're not going to split the estate. It's going to be remain one single estate. So then it's considered, although the father is dead, it's considered as one person's estate. The two brothers are now our heirs, Yorshim, but not partners, not Shutfim. So therefore, bad news, they do have to give Ma'asa Behema, because non-partners from one estate, you do have to give Masa Behema. However, they are exempt from kolbon, just like their father would have been had he been alive, exempt from the kolbon had he given the machzis hashekel for these two boys. Now that the father is dead and these two boys are continuing to manage his estate as if it was one entity, they do not have to give the kolbon, but they do, as non-partners, have to give Masa Behema. Kishechayovin b'masa behema, piturin min ha-kolbon. Another example of such a paradox in an entirely different realm of halacha is this. Kol makom sheyesh mecher, a father has the right to marry, biblically, a father has the right to marry off his minor daughter. And he can sell her, so to speak. Sell her as a maidservant. But he can only do this when she is a minor child. So kol mokom sheyesh meche, wherever the father has the authority to sell his daughter, ein kanas. There is no kanas, there is no fine if that daughter at that age is raped. Normally, if a child is raped either through an ones, forcibly, physically forcibly, or through a pitoy, through a seduction, a verbal seduction, the rapist must pay the father a fine of chamishim kesef, a significant amount of money, 50 kesef. That halacha is specified in the Torah, applies to a girl who has reached the age of being a nara. A nara is defined as a girl who has reached puberty, A, and B, is over the age of 12 years and one day. So if the girl is yesh mecher, she's less than that age, hasn't yet achieved puberty, she's 10, she's 11, then the father can sell her, but if she is raped, there is no knas to the father. No knas from rapist to father. Kol mokom sheyesh knas. However, if we're speaking of a girl who has attained the age of being a nara, in which case the rapist now has to pay the father that knas, that fine, but at that age, ein mecher, the father is not entitled to sell her into as an omaha avriya, as a maidservant. Now, it happens that this Mishnah is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Meir. However, the Chachamim disagree, and they say that a ketana, a child from the young age of 3 years until puberty, yesh lo mecher v'yesh lo knas, both. To continue, kol mokom sheyesh miyun. The halacha is that if a young girl, a minor child, minor girl, is orphaned, no father, her mother and brothers can, with her consent, marry her off. However, she has the right of meyun. She has the right to refuse that marriage, to annul that marriage, when she reaches the age of puberty, and she can say, I don't want this marriage, and the marriage is dissolved without any get, without any formal divorce document. So kol mokom sheyesh meyun, when she's at that young age and can still refuse and protest and annul the marriage, ein chalitza. If her husband's her husband dies and her husband had a brother, she does not fall before this surviving brother-in-law for yibum, and no requirement of chalitza. She's a minor child. However, once she's reached the age of puberty, now she's a full-fledged wife. If her husband dies and she's as yet childless, her husband's brother has the right of yibum or chalitza in such a situation. But at that age, when she's reached puberty, ein meyun. At that point, had she been married off by her surviving mother after her father died, or brothers, there is no longer, she no longer has the right of meyun. That's meyun she can only do up until puberty. Once she's reached the stage of puberty, that right of annulling the marriage retroactively does not exist. The Mishnah continues, Kol mokom sheyesh tekiyah ein havdalah, an interesting ancient practice. The practice was that on Erev Shabbos, as the day was getting to an end and Shabbos was approaching, there was a minhag to blow the shofar six times. First, a tekiyah was sounded in order to tell the people in the field, stop plowing, stop the agricultural work. This was done around mincha time, let's say about 3 p.m. on an average day. Then there was a second sounding of the shofar somewhat later for the storekeepers, to let them know Shabbos is coming, time to shut down. A third tekiyah was sounded just before sunset, and that was to begin to light candles, to remove pots from the stove, to perform the activities of hatmona, etc. Then a short time would go by, the time that it would take to fry, the Gemara says, a small fish, short amount of time would go by. Three soundings of the tekiyah already were sounded. Now they would give a tekiyah, teruah, tekiyah, and that's it, Shabbos is here. So that procedure of blowing the shofar was done every Friday, even if Friday was Yom Tov. If Yom Tov fell on Friday, and then Shabbos was coming, so people had to know, yes, it's Yom Tov, but you was allowed to cook and allowed to bake, etc., etc., but Shabbos is coming, you gotta have to stop that soon. So they would sound the tekiyos on Yom Tov day, out of Shabbos. But ain't havdalah. On touch of Yom Tov, there's no havdalah. Not in davening, you don't say atoch and antono, and not with the ayin al hakos. V'chol makom sheyesh havdalah. However, where there is havdalah, for example, if Yom Tov comes on a Sunday, so there is havdalah motzoi Shabbos ain't tekiyah. But on Shabbos, you don't sound the tekiyah to let people know that Sunday Yom Tov is coming. Yom Tov shechalios be'erev Shabbos tokein v'lo mavdilin. So if Yom Tov falls in Erev Shabbos on a Friday, you sound the shofar as usual to tell people to stop the various malachos which are permitted on Yom Tov but won't be permitted soon because Shabbos is coming. V'lo mavdilin, but there's no havdalah recited. However, b'motzoi Shabbos, if Yom Tov falls on a Saturday night, Sunday, then mavdilin, you recite havdalah. V'lo token, but you don't blow the shofar on Shabbos to tell people that Yom Tov is coming. Kate said, Mavdilin, what do you say in the Havdalah Motsoi Shabbos when it's Yom Tov? So obviously you do the combination of Kiddush and Havdalah, but in the Havdalah portion of that Kiddush, Kate said, Mavdilin, you recite the words, HaMavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh. God who has distinguished between sanctity and sanctity, between the greater sanctity of Shabbos and the lesser sanctity of Yom Tov. Mora explains that this phrase, Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh, is only recited in the Chasimas HaBrocha, the very end of the Brocha, you say, Baruch Ato Hashem, HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh. But in the opening of the Brocha, Baruch Ato Hashem, L'Kenu Melech Olam, HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol, is what you say, not HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh. The Mishnah concludes, Rabbi Dosa Omer, you don't say Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh, but you say Ben Kodesh Chamur, between the greater sanctity of Shabbos, L'Kodesh HaKal, to the lesser sanctity of Yom Tov. However, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, because we do not want to refer to Yom Tov as Kodesh HaKal, as lesser sanctity. Halachically, it is a lesser sanctity, but it's not proper to refer to it that way. So therefore, the Chasima is, as we all know, Baruch Ato Hashem HaMavdil Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh. And so we have completed two rather lengthy and interesting Mishnayos, very diverse subjects, and we have finished in the process lesson number 4 in our study of Mishnayos Maseches Chulin.